The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. A lot to get to on today's program. Following up a little bit as well on some of the content that we got into yesterday, passing the March 11th anniversary on Sunday, we went through some verses in Daniel 8, which I'll refer to here again in just a second. But I want to start by just quoting from America Under Attack. This is my father's booklet from 3 or 4 or 5 years ago, one of the more popular booklets that we produced a few years back. And many of you I know are familiar with the content here, but he says, when Satan was cast down, he immediately went after spiritual Israel. So that's what we discussed yesterday on the show. You can get to that program at thetrumpet.com or at kpcg.fm. All of our live broadcasts are converted to podcasts a few hours after the show. But it says here, that was his first target, the devil. His first target was the church, God's people. But he didn't stop there. After that, he directed his attack against physical Israel. Who is that? Specifically, it is three of the modern nations that descended from the biblical nation of Israel, chiefly the United States, Britain, and the Jewish state. And so the point that my father makes in that booklet is that Satan used the same strategy, the same approach when bringing down these nations, chiefly the United States. He used an Antiochus type. We talked about Antiochus from Daniel 8 just yesterday. He used an Antiochus type to bring the nation down from the top down. That's the way that Satan has worked. And this individual, regarding the one that we studied yesterday, the one in the church, Daniel 8 and verse 11, it says that he magnified himself even against the prince of the host, even against Jesus Christ. And then verse 12, this is in Daniel 8, and an host was given him against the daily, the work, by reason of transgression, and it cast down the truth to the ground, and it practiced, and it prospered. How did it prosper? Well, it prospered because of transgression. It really flourished because of sin. And you saw it in the church. If you've read Malachi's message or Raising the Ruins, I mean, you know about this story. We've seen this happen in God's church. And in so many ways, we've seen it happen in the United States as well. I referred to this piece, I forget when it was, a few weeks back on the program here, this column by Larry Elder about how that if the if the news media had done its job, Barack Obama would not have become president. I mean, if they were concerned about telling the truth, like they say they are, the major media, I mean, then he never would have been voted in. And this column here, Larry Elder, he says, Joan Walsh of the liberal website Salon.com described how fellow journalists were swooning during the presidential candidacy over the first-time senator from Illinois. They were swooning over Barack Obama. They were going to the campaign events. They wanted to hear his speeches. And this is the point that my father makes in Chapter 2 of America Under Attack, referring to Michael Hastings' book and the powerful personal effect that Barack Obama had on journalists when he was out on the campaign trail. My father said in an interview with about his book, Hastings told MSNBC's Martin Bashir, but that's the presence of Obama, even on the press corps, even on the people who follow him every day. When they're near him, they lose their minds sometimes. They start behaving in ways that are juvenile, and amateurish, and they swoon. He used the same word as Larry Elder did in that column. Well, he was, of course, referring to Joan Walsh of the liberal website Salon.com. When they're near him, they lose their minds and swoon. Now, as my father brought out in that booklet, is that good? I mean, is that healthy? Is that what you would call normal behavior? He went on to say here, the mainstream media regularly just go along with what the president says, even at times when it can be easily proven false. What is causing such actions? Even Hastings himself admitted to getting caught up in the behavior around the president. That's speaking of Barack Obama. And he joked about it with his exchange with Bashir in that interview. And you look at what, I mean, it continues to this day. Of course, now President Trump is in office, and the reaction is on the other side of the equation, the complete and total opposite, the opposite extreme, hysterical, panicked. There was you may have seen the piece the other day about this former, I think she's the former editor of the New York Times, the former executive editor, Jill Abramson, who said that she carries an Obama doll in her purse to help her cope with the Trump era. That's, I mean, it's ridiculous. But this is not just some, you know, rabid supporter of Barack Obama at one of his rallies. This was the executive editor, the former executive editor of the New York Times. These are the ones that pretend to be fair and balanced, that pretend to be middle of the road, that pretend to be not partisan. Abramson wrote, it's easy to look at what's happening in Washington, D.C. and despair. That's why I carry a little plastic Obama doll in my purse. I pull them out every now and then to remind myself that the United States had a progressive African-American president until very recently. Some people find this strange, but you have to take comfort where you can find it in Donald Trump's America. She's one of the swooners, and she continues to swoon. She continues to worship this Antiochus type. I saw a story just today, the former Nike chief. He's become a hermit in Ohio to avoid any news of Donald Trump. Eric Hagerman is his name. He was so devastated by Donald Trump's election victory that he moved out into the boonies, I guess, and cut off all contact with the outside world. He retreated to an Ohio pig farm, it says here. This is from the Times of London. An Ohio pig farm, and he lives alone. He's unplugged from the news. Not just the fake news. All news. The Times says here, since Mr. Trump won the White House on November 8th, 2016, Hagerman, 53 years old, he's an adult, evidently, has taken elaborate steps to avoid learning anything about the state of American politics. They include listening to white noise through headphones on his daily visit to his favorite coffee shop, watching his beloved Cleveland Cavaliers basketball team on mute, forsaking social media, and asking friends and family never to speak about current affairs. His media ban, which he calls the blockade, means that he knows nothing about the daily soap opera of the Trump administration, the investigation into Russian election meddling, the neo-Nazi protests in Charlottesville, Virginia, well, and on and on and on it goes. So his reaction is to just completely tune out, to completely pull away, to cut off all contact with the news media, and in a lot of ways, that's probably good. But how do you explain this kind of a reaction in either extreme? The hold that Barack Obama had on so many people, making them swoon, and even to this day, former New York Times editors carrying dolls in their purse. Andrew Miller. It's not at the top spot just now, but I think it's second or third on the website right now. How the Steele dossier hurts America. You look at what was happening in that last year or so of the Obama administration as it was working together with the Hillary Clinton campaign and all of the nefarious activity going on. It's frightening, really. I mean, given the freedoms enshrined in the Constitution of the United States, what was going on in those final months? It was brought out in that Devin Nunes memo, as Andrew Miller brings out at thetrumpet.com today. Andrew says, Americans across the nation are discussing the Nunes memo. We now know that people connected to the presidential campaign of Hillary Clinton hired former British spy Christopher Steele to produce a scandalous and unverified report that claims Donald Trump engaged in illicit acts with Russian prostitutes. The Nunes memo reveals that although the FBI knew the origins, the FBI did, bias and unconfirmed nature of the Steele dossier, the FBI's highest leaders used it to obtain a court order to spy on the Trump campaign. So they started spying, beginning with Carter Page. But they were spying on a lot of others as well as they came into contact with Carter Page. At least that's all that we know of now. Andrew says here, even though the FBI director James Comey knew the dossier was salacious and unverified, his bureau used it as evidence in the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, FISA Court, that is. The target for the surveillance was a citizen named Carter Page. To understand why the Nunes memo is important, why the FBI's actions are treacherous, and what it means for the United States as a constitutional republic, you must begin by understanding how and why Steele's dossier was compiled. And then Andrew goes into some of that that fairly recent history. But here, all of this was going on in the lead up to the election in November 2016, and even after, all the way up to President Trump's inauguration last January. And in listening to the news media today, well, you'd think all of the corruption is within the Trump White House. The reaction to anything that he says or tweets, just the hysterical reaction. And it's not to say that he doesn't nettle them from time to time. But the blindness that you see in the Antiochus camp, it's something to behold. Over the weekend, so many of them were up in arms again for something vulgar that the president said, I guess, on a campaign stop Friday night, maybe? And yet, will they look at themselves? Will they look at themselves? I even touched on that yesterday. That example with the tsunami back in 2004. And how that even religious figures were questioning God, were criticizing God in their statements instead of looking at themselves. There's an article at American Greatness about the insidious Obama administration. And it says here, the public behavior by several Obama officials since Donald Trump's election has been shameful and shameless. And keep in mind, President Trump's been in office for just 14 months. And the reaction, the hysterical reaction, the shameful reaction, it goes back to his election, his inauguration. It says here, bitter about their unexpected defeat in November 2016 and terrified that their Trump-Russia conspiracy scheme will be exposed in full by Congress, Obama loyalists have been working overtime to discredit the president, smear Republican lawmakers, and keep the focus on Robert Mueller's investigation into the Trump campaign. All of those scandals during the Obama years and not one investigation. And of course, they have complete cover from the media, which is why there's so many of the Obama administration out there saying, hey, wasn't it great? We went 8 years and it was scandal-free. No scandals. No controversies. And now that Hillary Clinton didn't succeed Obama, look at the reaction from the swooners. It says, just days after Trump won the election, Josh Earnest, Obama's press secretary, openly began to question the legitimacy of Trump's victory and peddled Trump-Russia conspiracy tales to an eager, Trump-hating press corps. This is the day, just a few days after he won the election. And there was the spokesperson for Obama calling into question the legitimacy of his victory? Yes, indeed. Sally Yates refused to enforce Trump's travel ban in her position as acting attorney general. Loretta Lynch, Obama's last attorney general, recorded a video advocating violence to resist the new administration. This is Loretta Lynch. We should have pulled the clip for you. Comparing Trump to other, or comparing this resistance to the new administration to other great American struggles. And then it quotes Ms. Lynch here. It says, it has been people, individuals who have banded together, who simply saw what needed to be done, who have made the difference, Lynch said. They've marched. They've bled. Yes, some of them have died. This is hard. Every good thing is. And so she's calling on people to march, to bleed if they have to, as part of the resistance. Former FBI Director James Comey, who was fired by Trump in May 2017, routinely tweets cryptic, if not childish, political messages aimed at the president and Congress while defending the agency whose credibility he helped degrade. Former Vice President Joe Biden, he said in an interview last month that Trump is a joke. And all of these people are criticizing President Trump for what he says, for the statements he makes that are off color. But when will we look at ourselves? As I said yesterday, it goes on, this article, it's devastating, American greatness. It says, as congressional investigations close in on uncovering possible corruption related to handling the Christopher Steele dossier in the waning months of the Obama administration, former top officials are now ratcheting up their criticism of the president. Attorney General Eric Holder, the former attorney general, he's called for the abolition of the Electoral College, referred to Trump as an orange man, and blamed him for empowering neo-Nazis. It refers to an interview he did last month as well, in which he suggested that the president was guilty of obstruction of justice. And he made the claim that any one of my kids would make a better president than Donald Trump. That's the former attorney general in the Obama administration, Eric Holder. Well, last week, Jeff Sessions announced that that the Justice Department's going to be handing over the documents that the House Oversight Committee was looking for years. Operation Fast and Furious, one of the early scandals of the Obama administration. And Eric Holder, of course, never turned over the documents, which is why he was held in contempt. I think he was the only one in history, the only AG to be held in contempt before Congress. This article continues, but the man who is spinning the hardest right now is John Brennan, Obama's former CIA director. Not only are Brennan's malicious remarks totally inappropriate for someone who once served as the nation's top intelligence officer, he seems desperate to put up a public defense of his role in disseminating the dossier. I mean, it was just circulating all over the place. Unverified. Not a lot of truth to it, from what we know. And yet just circling around all of these intelligence agencies. Thanks to John Brennan and others like him. James Comey and the like. Speaking of Brennan, this article says nearly every tweet has been a personal attack on the president. He's compared Trump to a narcissist, a vengeful autocrat, He's called him a deeply flawed person, a small, petty, and banal. It says a few days, I'm skipping down further. It says Brennan on Meet the Press accused Devin Nunes, chairman of the president of the Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, of abusing the office of the chairmanship. It says here later on, Brennan has been on a full-fledged propaganda tour vilifying the president in a truly despicable manner. In an outrageous interview on MSNBC, March 2nd, this is just, last week, Brennan called Trump unstable, inept, and unethical. He said he was serious. He said he has serious, serious doubts that Trump will ensure the country is safe, secure, and prosperous in the future. These are the individuals that are concerned about the off-the-wall comments of the president, President Trump. Look at these comments. Look at these criticisms. Look at this kind of hysterical reaction to anything and everything the current president of the United States says or tweets. This article finally says at the conclusion here, as the Trump-Russia plotline starts to unravel and the real culprits, political operatives disguised as law enforcement agents, intelligence community professionals, and Obama cabinet members are fingered, we can expect to hear more vituperation from these folks. Yes, indeed. They're scrambling. They're doing everything they can to bring down a sitting president of the United States. And it's just driving the wedge between the two sides in the United States more deeply in. I mean, the division between the two camps, those on the side of President Trump, those on the side of former President Barack Obama. A house divided cannot stand, Jesus said. It can't stand. The sickness is from within. Death by suicide, as President Lincoln said back in the 1830s. That's what we're doing to ourselves. No one will stop and look at themselves. I mean, this is what true repentance is all about. Looking at self in the mirror and changing self first. When we come back, we'll get into a Bible study that is somewhat on that subject, not specifically on repentance, but we'll be going through some scriptures, some basic scriptures in the Old Testament and New, about what it takes to receive blessings from God, to be blessed of God. There is a way. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. You can email the program, td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td at kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Well, we're not that far away from the New Testament Passover observance, and many of you listening, I know, will be going through these verses here in John 13, taken from that final Passover of Jesus Christ's. And he says here to his disciples, this is John 13 and verse 14, "If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet." There's a direct command from Jesus Christ saying that we should follow his example and wash others' feet, wash another's feet at that Passover ceremony, of course. But it says in verse 15 here, "For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. Follow my steps. Follow in my steps. Follow my example." He set an example for us, Jesus Christ did. He set an example for us in everything. And following that example is how we obtain happiness and joy. It's how we receive blessings, prosperity, and abundance. If you look back at the Old Testament, I mean, if the ancient Israelites didn't follow the instructions exactly the way God said to do it, well, they would have died physically. As it was, they had to follow all the instructions, smearing the blood on the doorpost and so on, so that they might be spared from death. But notice what it says in verse 17. This is, again, John 13. It says, "If you know these things, happy are you if you do them." So you're happy if you're doing them. It's not enough just to read it. If we're hearers only, we're deceiving ourselves, like James said. But doers, the doers of the law, those are the ones who are happy. If you know these things that Christ commands and you do them, then you will be happy. You will be happy. You think about God's law and how wonderful it is. What a wonderful blessing it is. We see what happens when transgression spreads. Look at what happened to God's church. Look at what's happening in the United States. In chapter 11 of The Missing Dimension in Sex, this is the book by Herbert Armstrong that we use as a textbook for our Principles of Living class at school, at the college. Mr. Armstrong introduces the chapter, the content in chapter 11, by saying, "Man is not to be punished for sin merely because a God gave an arbitrary command, but God gave the commands because these violations rob us of joys and inflict automatic harm." God's not just in heaven giving some list of arbitrary commands based on a whim. He gives the commands because violating these commands rob us of joy and they inflict harm upon us and upon our children. Mr. Armstrong goes on to say, "God's laws were set in motion to give us happiness, peace, security, and plenty, and thrilling, radiant joys. God's laws are the gift of his love to us. God wants us to enjoy the blessings they make possible." He says, "This is the plain and rational truth. Why has a rebellious mankind insisted on being willingly ignorant of that basic fact of life? Why is mankind willingly ignorant of this basic fact that God gives us his laws as the gift of his love because he wants us to enjoy the blessings they make possible?" Look over at Deuteronomy chapter 11. Deuteronomy 11, and speaking of the blessings of God's laws, Paul in Romans 7, he talked about the commandment God's law being holy and just and good. It's a tremendous gift. A gift of God's law, of his love, rather. God's law is a gift. Deuteronomy 11 and verse 8, it says here, "Therefore shall you keep all the commandments which I command you this day, that you may be strong and go in and possess the land whither you go to possess it." Commandment keeping, Moses told the Israelites. That's what makes us strong. That's what strengthens our families. That's what brings strength and power to the nation. Obeying these commands. God says, point blank, if you keep them, you'll be strong. In this same chapter, further on in, it says in verse 26, "Behold, I set before you this day a blessing and a curse, a blessing if you obey the commandments of the Eternal your God, which I command you this day, and a curse if you will not obey the commandments of the Eternal your God, but turn aside out of the way which I command you this day, to go after other gods which you have not known." Why is it man refuses to accept the fact that by setting his laws before us, God actually is showing us the way to live happy, abundant, joyful lives? Man refuses to see that. Why? To go back to that quote from The Missing Dimension in Sex, why has a rebellious mankind insisted on being willingly ignorant of this basic fact of life? Look over at chapter 12, staying here in Deuteronomy. My son had an exchange recently with a young man who doesn't know the truth of God, who just looked at him as if he was the most abused young man in the world. My son, that is, because, well, he observes the Sabbath, or he does this, or he lives this way. In fact, it's a wonderful blessing that soon that young man will have his mind open to. It's a blessing to obey God. It's a great blessing to obey his laws. It's not. I remember many instances in my youth not playing in a basketball game on Friday night, taking a stand for God, because these are the laws that God says, you obey this and you'll be blessed for it. Sabbath observance is a tremendous blessing. I don't look back on that childhood or those days of my youth and think, wow, if I only could have played in that one Friday night game. As it was, it helped me to build some character, to stand up for the truth, to be confident in Christ. I mean, not in an abrasive kind of way where, you know, I wore my religion on my shoulder, but just quietly going about the way of life that we're meant to go about as God's people, obeying his laws, his commandments. In Deuteronomy 12:1, it says, "These are the statutes and judgments which you shall observe to do in the land which the Eternal God of your fathers gives you to possess it all the days that you live upon the earth." These are the blessed laws of God. Observe these laws. Keep these commandments. Verse 8 says, "You shall not do after all the things that we do here this day, every man whatsoever is right in his own eyes." See, they had already gotten into that kind of human reasoning, that Judges 21:25 mentality. It wasn't just at the end of the dark Judges period. I mean, this was something Israel struggled with from the beginning. They got out into the wilderness and started murmuring and complaining and criticizing Moses and wanting to go back into Egypt, because they didn't obey God's commands. When transgression sets in, look at how everything breaks down and falls apart. That has been the lesson. We've seen it happen in God's church. We've seen it happen to nations. Great nations, the recipients of all of this fabulous wealth and prosperity, thanks to the obedience to God's laws coming from Abraham. Deuteronomy 30 here and verse 19. This is similar to what it says in Deuteronomy 11, but this is perhaps more frequently quoted in some of our articles and publications. But it says in verse 19, I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I've set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both you and your seed may live. Choose it. Choose it. I mean, this is the way of blessings, but you've got to go after it. You've got to receive it. You've got to choose the right way. Verse 20 says that you may love the Lord your God, and that you may obey his voice, and that you may cleave unto him, for he is your life and the length of your days, that you may dwell in the land which the Eternal sware unto your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give them. See, just like with ancient Israel, it's the same today. It's like Mr. Armstrong said so many times, there's two ways of life. There's the way of obedience that leads to blessings, and there's the way of disobedience that leads to curses and death. God says, choose his law, choose obedience, choose blessings. What God commands us to do, or commands us not to do, is for our own benefit. It's because he wants us to receive blessings. And for those things that are thou shalt not, I mean, the things God commands us not to do, he commands us not to do it so that we'll not only avoid the pain and the suffering, but so that we might not rob ourselves of the joyful abundance that he promises to a marriage and a family, for example. As I told the students in Principles of Living this morning, I mean, if you save yourself for your future spouse and your bride or your husband, then it's just going to make that marital union that much more joyous and blissful. God wants our young people to have happy marriages, strong marriages, righteous marriages and families. That's how the church, God's church, grows strong. That's how nations gain in strength. You see the family breaking down today, though, and, well, it shouldn't be a surprise what's happening to our nations. But going back to this choice, the power of choice, I mean, you decide whether you're blessed or cursed. It's cause and effect. That's a law, Mr. Armstrong said. He also said this in Missing Dimension and Sex. This creation of right spiritual character in us demanded free moral agency, that man must intelligently choose the right as opposed to the wrong, that he exercise free choice, develop self-discipline. He's got to choose it. He's got to choose it. There's another statement he made in Mystery of the Ages where he talks about the awesome human potential that's there for us if, as he said, if we care enough about it to resist Satan's wiles and evils and discouragements and to persevere in God's way. If we care enough about it, if we're willing to stay the course, if we're willing to persevere unto the end, to endure to the end. Let me just conclude this segment over in Galatians. God obviously doesn't want to force us along. We're free moral agents. He wants us to choose. He wants to inspire us to follow in his steps, to follow in the steps of Jesus Christ. Galatians 6 and verse 4, it says in the Moffat translation, let everyone bring his own work to the test. Then he will have something to boast about on his own account, and not in comparison with his fellows. See, bring all of your works to the test. Prove yourself. Prove yourself. Verse 5 says, for every man shall bear his own burden. I mean, we have to work out our own salvation, as Paul said, with fear and trembling. Not that it's just a solo effort without God's help. I mean, God has to empower us. We need the Spirit of God. We need the righteousness of Christ. We need the faith of Christ. But we have to choose. God won't force us. We have to choose. And then Paul says here in verse 7, be not deceived. God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man sows, that shall he also reap. Don't be under illusion, as it says in the Phillips translation. A man's harvest in life will depend entirely on what he sows. Cause and effect, blessings and cursings. Don't be deceived. God says we're all free moral agents. We all have the power to choose. And there is cause for every effect. If we choose life, if we choose God's law, if we choose the way of love, then we're choosing blessings. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a few emails that have come in over the past week. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
I think I do have just a few minutes to comment on one more article before I get to the emails to finish off with today. This is from the Spectator, the Churchill marriage, and Lady Castle Ross. This is, as I say, from the Spectator. Which says here, it's all over the internet, so it must be true. Not only did Winston Churchill oppose women's rights, gas tribesmen, starve Indians, firebomb Dresden, nurse anti-Semitism, and wish to nuke Moscow, he even cheated on his wife in a 4-year affair with Doris Delavigne. It says further on, all these fables, everyone demolished by serious inquiry, are commonplace today. As Secretary of State Cordell Hull observed, a lie will gallop halfway around the world before the truth has time to pull its britches on. And so here's this, I think it's even a television program, Churchill's Secret Affair. Isn't that great? Digging up some kind of dirt on someone who's been dead more than 50 years. Anything, to malign a hero, a towering figure in history, someone who saved Britain, who saved the Western society, the Western world. This article concludes with, why do we continually encounter character assaults on figures we revere? It says here, it stems from a skewed vision of the egalitarian principle. The theory that there are no great figures, we are all the same. We've touched on this before, I know. There's no great figures, we're all the same. Churchill's just a common man. You know, he rides the sub. He takes the tube on the way to the most important speech of his life. The conclusion of this Spectator piece says, the Churchill marriage remains undiminished, as it should be, a tribute to a great man and woman. As Churchill was wont to remark on his 57-year union, here firm, though all be drifting. That was part of Churchill's strength. That bedrock relationship that he had, that family relationship that he had. And yet there's so many today that just want to revise the history and say that, well, really he was just like you and me, divided, divorced, and oh, by the way, he was a racist, he was this, he was that. It's a pity, it's a shame, really. And it's happening. It's happening all over the place. It's not just people going after their political opponents today. They're going after the ones that are dead and buried, that have been dead and buried for generations. Just a simple little historical revision. And we think it's not that big of a deal, but young people are growing up without knowing this history, swallowing these lies. Well, that's why it's so important for us to declare the truth. Like I said on yesterday's program, I mean, if God gives you revelation, if God gives you the truth, then you have a responsibility to declare it, to tell it, to proclaim it. Which is why we have to work so hard to remove sin from our lives, to remove the transgression, so that the daily, so that the work can continue. A few emails here that have come in recent days. This one here from London. I was so happy and inspired to hear the sound bites from the UK Robbers Cave trip. This is something that came in last week, obviously. What a delight to have heard the joyful family atmosphere and how much God blessed you throughout. We were certainly praying for you, considering the weather conditions. It says, also, I want to say that your programs are such a valuable and irreplaceable source of inspiration, which keeps us not only up to date with the news, but also keeps our mind focused on what God is doing. Another one here in response to some of those sounds from Robber's Cave last week. It says, in hearing of this history told right now, of the news of winning the court case just 5 hours before the Robber's Cave Bible study, I guess this actually would have been in response to last Friday's program. It says, it does cause one to feel as if they were transported to that time and place in spirit, though never there physically, making all hairs stand on end as if electrified. And this is talking about those clips we played last Friday from my father's sermon back in 2003 when he announced the court case victory, and then there was like 15 or 16 seconds of continuous applause. And this listener says here, so now it is very understandable just how overwhelming and exhilarating that moment in time was, and not just for hearing the news of the legal victory in court for the PCG, but because beyond a doubt, there was the hand of God there delivering this victory. Just knowing that is most awe-inspiring, not only knowing the magnitude of the victory itself, but that God was there. It says, the next best thing to being there otherwise is in hearing these audio files of this most glorious sermon given on the day of March 8th. And then it says finally, how great it would be to make a little video production with Mr. Fleury's voice giving the news in the sermon, and as if following his narration, for there to be footage of the courthouse scenes, news headlines. He's giving you some good ideas here, Sam. With Bible verses fading in and out of the pictures. And at the end, a grand finale exploding with montages of booklet covers mixed with scenarios of glorious things. It says, or something resembling a victory parade with Mystery of the Ages taking the lead and raising the ruins at the end. The church who won knows that the works of truth are the highest victors. So an eloquent response coming in from one of our listeners following the program last Friday. This one here comes from Florida. It says, thank you so much for all your hard work and dedication to God's work and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. My wife and I listen to the program in the evening and enjoy all the prophetic topics and news that is normally not heard anywhere else. This one here comes from Saskatchewan in Canada. It says, thanks to you and everyone else involved for your perseverance in putting the program, this program together and delivering it. This is talking about the one, last Friday, we had some trouble with the power going out and just getting the audio files. And I think this might have been from last Thursday, the Thursday show. In any event, it says, it's a strong reminder that Satan is doing all he can to prevent himself from being exposed and I need to continually edify my prayers for the work. It says, I teared up at the clip of your father making the announcement. I was there that day. I was just 11 years old. I didn't really understand the significance of the moment. I was young and my family had only been attending services for a year or two, but I remembered how my parents had been looking for Mystery of the Ages and any other works by Mr. Armstrong on eBay and used bookstores. Seeing my parents' excitement and hearing the roaring applause after the announcement got me excited that day too. She was just 11 at the time. Thank you for the continued reminders of the incredible history of God's true church and the admonition to keep our prayers strong. Another one here from Mississippi. It says, regarding your recent program on how Satan has masterfully used Hollywood to promote his perverted agenda, I was speaking with a retired physician earlier today. I forgot exactly how the subject of human intellect versus animal instinct came about, but without going into great spiritual detail, I told him that, yes, you can teach a dog to fetch, but you've never seen that dog teach another dog to fetch. It says, finally, I really enjoyed the sounds of the camp out. Good job, Sam. So that probably comes from Sam's father once again. Did he move to Mississippi? This one from Arkansas. It says, wow, Mr. Fleury, I only was able to catch the first 20 minutes of the show today, but what an amazing segment. This was Friday's show. I got it confused. We did the show Friday last week on the role of fathers or the attack on men. And it was last Thursday where we had the Robbers Cave announcement that we won the lawsuit. But this one's in response to the one about men, America's men, failing in body, mind, and spirit. And it says here, we really need to get this segment to the world. The entire world needs to hear what you said about boys and fatherlessness. I wish we could just sit the world right down and help them, but I know we will in a very short time. Well, I have to get on to the office. Again, great segment. I can't wait to hear the rest of it on my way home from work tonight. And then one last one here, again, in response to that show, that same show about American men, was this program was, or I was needing this program this morning. I've been in a deep question about the booklet, That Prophet. You've made it clear who has picked up the mantle of Elijah. It has been very hard for me to accept a replacement for Mr. Armstrong, but the truth flashed before me as I listened. So thank you very much. If you'd like to write the program, as I say, you can send emails to td@kpcg.fm. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.